This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I'm just a little distracted at the moment. Hold on. Okay, now we're rolling. Sorry. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. Hold it. I got cars coming and a guy is walking and I need to get out of the way so that he can walk, and then we'll let him get by, and we'll be on our way. Okay, here we go. It is episode 231. And it's been a good week. It has finally warmed up again. So it's 94-ish degrees outside, and my car has been sitting in the sun today. I aired it out a little bit before I actually started recording, but I do have the windows up so that there isn't quite as much road noise. So this is going to be a little bit interesting. By the time I get home, I would expect I'll be toasty. And as I have said before, there's actually some people pay to go to saunas. And I get it just by doing my podcast. There is a car in front of me that it's just got something plastered all over the back end of the car. It looks like mud or something, or cement dust or something. I don't know. Wherever they've been, they got into some dirt. Anyways, everything is puttering along. I've had some nice conversations with friends this week. Talked a lot about it. Interesting stuff. I should be starting to get back together with my buddy that I get together with on Wednesday evenings again. He's through his classes, and they had a little foreign gal come and stay at their house for 6 weeks, I think, during summer. And so obviously that took some extra time away, but they're done with that, and so I'm looking forward to seeing him again. Anyway, so that's good. The book is good. The book is good. I did get through my first read-through, so that was good. And it seems to be doing fine. Then I kind of decided, okay, I need to get a better idea as to what's happening for the cover. So I started that on Monday, and I had been hoping that by now there would be some really cool engraving style illustration of some kind of funky looking robot. I was hoping somebody would come up with that, kind of some distressed, abstract robot type of a thing, and I just couldn't find anything. It is one of the discouragements of my life. One of the things, I don't know that I would do any differently if I had a chance to do all over again, but it is one of those things that I would just dearly love to be able to draw. And I've piddled around with drawing here and there over the years, and I think I could learn, but it's just time. Now, my mother-in-law has, at this point in her life, decided to start. I'm a little bit tired today, so I'm having to focus. decided to start taking art lessons. And I guess at Hobby Lobby, there's a artiste who does lessons, and you just pay to go and sit, and she works through different topics, and you just sit there and do your little art stuff, and then she gives you suggestions. And I suppose what I could have done was go down there and see if she could help me get something drawn. I finally found a picture of something, but because of the way the covers have been, a picture doesn't really do it for me. I need a line drawing of some sort. Found a picture that was reminiscent of Salvador Dali's Persistence of Memory, I think is the name of the painting, where it has the watch that's melting off the table. I found a little clock, a little mantle clock, that was created in that style so that the dial and the face of the clock is actually melting away, and the clock is kind of squeegeed to the side a little bit. And that would actually fit in this third book, Amanda and the Cog-Shifting Imp. It would fit for the book, and it would fit pretty well. And so, but I couldn't find a line drawing of it. All I could find was this picture of an actual product that was available. And I thought, well, shoot, since, you know, I got a picture, I'm a good drawer. So I decided that I would give it a run. And after looking for two evenings, trying to find something that would work, not being able to find anything that would work. So I thought, well, I can give this a run. But you know, I mean, I was watching, I was watching these inking videos of these artists who are using tablets and using a three-sided stylus so that when they're drawing on these tablets, it looks like they're actually using a brush. It has all that beautiful life in it of those brush lines coming to a point when you get to the end. All that stuff. And I start drawing my little lines around, you know, the thing in Illustrator. Excuse me. And I then lift the lines up off the page and just print it with just the lines. And then I'm trying to take my little pencil and see where I would shade it in. And it quickly became apparent that I am not an artist. Man's Cliff Eastwood used to say, Clint Eastwood, and his brother Cliff. Clint Eastwood used to say, a man's got to know his limitations. And I quickly decided that last night after working for hours. But what it did do is it did convince me that I needed to give up that path and just quit being frustrated about not being able to find something and just find something. Go to the work of finding something. And I know how to do that because I do it all the time, like when I'm working on covers for my dad's books, because my dad writes too. He writes smaller books. And so whenever he gets done with a book, then I build him a cover. And sometimes when I'm looking for the right picture, I'll just keep looking and just keep looking, even though I've found one that will sort of work. And he'll say, it's fine, Phil, just use that one. Quit wasting so much of your time. Just use that one. I'm like, Dad, just hold on, Dad. Just wait. Let's try it. And so just powering through and finding something comes down to broadening my search criteria to the place that it's really generic and going to come back with hundreds and hundreds of search results, and then it's just a matter of sitting there and going through them. And so that's what I actually did last night after I figured out that I, in fact, do have some limitations, and I am not an artist. And I just kept pounding through them until I got it. So then I spent the rest of the evening looking through and trying to find the right background and, you know, trying to see if this would work or that would work. And I think I have all the pieces. I can't actually do the cover until I have the book laid out to where I know exactly how many pages it is, because it's a cover that wraps around and the page count determines how thick the spine is. So I have to wait to have the actual page count, and I can't actually lay the book out, or I should say I wouldn't want to lay the book out until I have a page count, until I finish editing. And so, of course, the next step then is to start editing. But I do have a long weekend this weekend, so I'm going to start back in tonight and just start going through it and seeing how much I can get accomplished. The beta readers are coming back in on Amanda and the Hair-Footed Flame, and everything seems to be fine there and getting a lot of good input. So all is well, all is well. I've been thinking, and now that I don't have any notes and decided this is what I was going to talk about, now I have this sinking feeling in the back of my mind that maybe I've mentioned this before, or maybe I've talked about this before, but I have been thinking for the last several weeks about diversity. And I've been thinking about the world and human beings. And I've come to a kind of different conclusion at this point in my life. And we'll get to that conclusion. What started me down this, in a minute, what started me down this road was I was just thinking about the new Pope, and I was thinking about his approach to a lot of things, which I happen to really like. I mean, when he came out and was talking about gay priests, and he in essence said, look, if someone is trying to live a life for God and loves Jesus and yet has this other thing in their life which they're struggling with and they haven't necessarily conquered yet, who am I to condemn them? And I think that's really cool. And of course, the Catholic Church had to come out later and explain it. But I thought that was really cool. And I've been thinking about churches, and I've been thinking about, because I'm working on, for my major client, I'm working on one of their membership renewal things, and so people have to answer certain questions. And I've been thinking about this whole idea of conformity versus diversity. And the thought came to me this week as I was thinking about all this. Was it really ever God's plan that we would all belong to the same church and have exactly the same cardinal doctrines, have exactly the same canon, you know, all those things? Was it really ever God's plan that there was only going to be a single church? I know we like to think about it in those terms, and we like to look around and we look at the early church and we like to say, See, there were only one church there, and it's just a shame that we have so many splinter groups that have splintered off and caused all this division. when if we were really serving Christ, there wouldn't be all this division. Now, that is actually, I actually think that's a true statement. If we were really serving Christ, all of us, and we're mature in Him, there wouldn't be all this structural division. My basic philosophy is there wouldn't be any structure to begin with, and therefore there wouldn't need to be any structural division. But having said that, because I believe in the ideal implementation, and the ideal implementation is just relationship and discipleship, which is 1-on-2, 1-on-4, 1-on-8, 1-on-12, and it's just living your lives in unity with each other, letting love cover a multitude of disagreements, and working together. I think that is the ideal implementation. Because what we see in structured, organized religions is the only reason that a structured, organized religion ever starts is to build a club, that the underlying basis of that club is to say, this is why we exist, this is our distinctives, this makes us different, and if you want to be a part of us, you have to agree with this, or we don't necessarily want you in our club. Oh, you can associate with us, but you know, if you're going to be a card-carrying member, you really have to toe the line and believe these things. Okay, so having said that, and that is pretty much characteristic of all truly organized religions, was it ever God's plan that there was only going to be one organized religion and all of us were going to toe the line? And honestly, as I've been thinking about all that, and I've been thinking about the diversity that there is in humanity, I have to say that the answer, that I feel like the answer to that question is no, it was never God's plan, because He knows human beings. And He knows there was no way. There was no way that we were ever going to be all a part of the same organized structure. It was inevitable that we were going to fracture out into the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of denominations that there are around the world. So then, should we regard that as a failure? Should we say, well, that's not the ideal implementation, and therefore all organized religion is bad? And that's really the crux of the kind of change of mind that I've had this week. Because up to this week, I've kind of been poo-pooing a little bit the idea of organized religion. But you know, at this point, in looking at it, in understanding there's diversity, in understanding that well-intentioned, good-meaning, loving, kind people can disagree as to what doctrine should be and what is moral and what is not moral. Understanding that, and understanding, as the Pope has said, who am I to condemn if someone is making this effort towards Christ, but they just have these other things in their life that either they believe differently about, or they, you know, don't really have a handle on. And I'm at that point, and I think I'm at a little bit of an additional point to that. And that is, could it be that certainly God knew the future, but all of this splintering that we see within organized religion, could it be that that really is not offensive to God at all? That what he sees when he looks at that is he sees that all of those things exist because someone needs them. Because it really helps the people who are in those organizations. They find the organization that fits them, and their life is better because they're in that organization than if they weren't in that organization. I'm getting my mail. And so, in that viewpoint, organized religion then does not exist as a kind of failure. Organization exists, religious organizations exist as a very pragmatic and necessary thing that allows people to find a place where they're comfortable, to find a place where they feel included, and by that, be strengthened in their walk. Because the ideal implementation, where everyone kind of does their own thing and visits with friends, but no one really holds them accountable. Yeah, there are some people that is just not going to work for. I'm backing into my garage. Now, you might say, I'm talking louder since I'm facing backwards. You might say, well, but doesn't that tell us how sad it is that we're not truly discipling people? And I would say, well, yeah, that does tell us how sad it is. But we really have a couple of choices. We can just sit around and say, well, it's really sad that people are that way, but too bad for them. Or we can say, well, yeah, it's sad that people are there that way, but at least there's an organized religion of a certain ilk and flavor that appeals to them, and so they can get some help there. I mean, my wife is the music minister at a Methodist church. We are Assemblies of God in our background. I'm going to roll down the window. We are Assemblies of God in our background, and so it's nothing for us to raise our hand and worship demonstratively, and the Methodist, a lot of them just don't do that. And in fact, there's some precious Methodist saints at the church where my wife is the music minister who really think that raising hands and doing stuff like that's all just a bunch of hokum. Which is okay, because the Methodists aren't that demonstrative in their worship. That's okay. And it's great that the Methodist church exists so that people who want to go and sit in a service and feel closer to God, they can do that without feeling awkward about seeing a bunch of people raising their hands and speaking in tongues and doing all that kind of stuff. It's okay, because all that diversity exists so that all the diversity of humanity can find a place to land. And one of my buddies this week, when we were talking about this, actually brought up a really interesting point. And I don't exactly know what this all means, but it was an interesting point that there was a time in humanity's life, according to the Bible, where humanity did all get together and they were working with one mind, one heart, towards a goal. And the story is that God came down and looked at them and basically said, this isn't really that good of a deal, this Tower of Babel, this tower that they're building. And so I'm just going to confuse their languages. They pretty much have to splinter out into all these groups. And that was an interesting observation. So maybe instead of looking at all of our organizations for religion and for Christianity and poo-pooing them, we just need to recognize that every single one of them is filling a need, and that's great. And we shouldn't be in our little organization and look over at someone else and say, "Well, yeah, but you all don't have the truth, and I'm actually more loved of God than you because I'm closer to his heart." You know, because we are all close to God's heart. And we are all in his mind and in his thoughts. And we should just, in love, respectfully disagree with each other, but understand that we are all on the path to him. Now, of course, that brings up an interesting question, which was a question that a friend asked me last week or the week before last when we were talking about the line. Where is the line? But I am already home, so we may talk about that in a future podcast. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.